Good evening, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Tonight's guest is Wayne Madsen. Wayne is best known for his outstanding reporting of Washington's insider news, The Wayne Madsen Report. It follows in the tradition of Drew Pearson's and Jack Anderson's famous Washington Merry-Go-Round syndicated column. Madsen was a senior fellow of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. He was also a communications security analyst with the National Security Agency in the 1980s and an intelligence officer in the U.S. Navy. He has testified on numerous occasions before the U.S. Congress. He has hosted a radio show on the internet-based radio station We the People Radio Network. Other hosts on the show include prominent members of the 911 Truth Movement, including Alex Jones and Kevin Barrett. His expertise has been sought for news programs the world over, some of which are now posted on YouTube. So let's welcome Wayne to the show now. Hi, Wayne. How are you?
Hi. Good to be with you.
Oh, good. Well, you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now, so we're going to kind of dive into it and see if we can come up with a little bit of the truth behind the scenes. Where do we begin?
Well, I mean, it's just so much going on these days, and unfortunately, the media, our corporate media, is feeding us just a plethora of nonsense. I always recommend that people, if they want to find out what's going on in the world, go to the media from around the world. Certainly nothing remotely connected to what we're fed here, especially out of Washington from the talking head cable news channels, which is they all try to compete with one another to see who can bring out the most trivial stories.
Yes, it certainly seems that way, and it is that way.
Absolutely.
Well, the media is controlled by some of those people that really pull the strings behind the scenes, isn't it?
It is, and, you know, it's very difficult here in Washington, and one of the reasons I started a website back in 05 and do a lot of other things to try to get the, you know, the word out from, you know, this beltway here in Washington, which it actually has a wall around it. It's not a visible wall, certainly nothing like the Berlin Wall, but it's a wall of disinformation, of this corporate, just this din of constant blathering, and it's very difficult to try to compete, of course, with the corporate media. But I think from what I'm seeing now, with many major newspapers now collapsing, laying off journalists, cutting their staff through all these mergers and acquisitions, I think the internet is obviously going to be all left after the smoke clears.
Yeah. Well, I noticed too that there's a buzz on the internet about the possibility of by 2012 the major media controlling the internet. They want to package it and sell it.
Right. This is the whole big issue. If people hear the term net neutrality, this is what it's all about. This is to try to keep the internet free of the corporate, what I call the vultures, and the other people that would prey on all that's left, really, is the internet. And we see mergers now. We see Sirius and XM. A big merger agreed to by the FCC there. So we're seeing more and more of this consolidation. Of course, Rupert Murdoch acquired last year the Wall Street Journal. Mm-hmm. Now there's rumors that he may go after another big prize, either the Washington Post or the New York Times. So we see this consolidation continuing by these people like Murdoch and others. But I think one of the things people have to keep in mind when they vote for their members of Congress this November is to pin these people down on where they stand on net neutrality. Mm-hmm. If they're for net neutrality, that means they're for continued free access to the internet. If mm-hmm. they're against it, they need to be voted out of office.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point. It seems that during the last 7 or 8 years, there's been a progressive movement towards complete secrecy and an erosion of the Constitution and our rights, as well as a manipulation of the global economy in favor of an elite few. Is this an accurate assessment?
Oh, I think so. You know, when you mentioned the secrecy, I saw this very early on after 9/11 in October of 2001. I mean, this was just a few weeks after 9/11. One of the steps that John Ashcroft took as Attorney General was to amend the Freedom of Information Act, as far as not amending the act itself, but the way the Justice Department implements it. Under President Clinton and Attorney General Reno, the onus was on the federal agencies. They were basically what the Reno guidelines said was, unless you can prove that something is, you know, going to affect national security, you must release it if pursuant to a Freedom of Information Act request.
Mm.
What Ashcroft did on October 12, 2001 was reverse that completely and said, we, the Justice Department, will back you up in lawsuits for Freedom of Information Act requests if there's any feeling that you don't want this information released. So what did this apply to? Information that had absolutely nothing to do with terrorism. It was EPA information on, huh, on toxic waste spills and all kinds of other information. And so we've basically seen the Freedom of Information Act and the Privacy Act, of course, and both of these critical laws that allow the people to have access to information held by the government. We've seen both of them totally emaciated.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems awfully convenient that that all occurred during 9/11. And, of course,
right,
there's a big movement that, you know, I mentioned earlier that Alex Jones and others are involved with a movement to get the truth out. Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, I think there's a sense. The problem with, you know, getting the truth out, whether it's about what actually happened on 9/11 or, you know, the lying that took place to get us into Iraq, the current lying that's going on, trying to tell the country why we may need to militarily attack Iran.
Mm-hmm.
This is such a widespread thing. And there's so many groups demanding, answers. The unfortunate thing is, the various groups that are doing this are very scattered. There's really no, and it's very, this is like herding cats, and I realize how difficult it is to get a popular movement, together, but,
yeah.
One of the problems is there's too many different groups working in different directions and seeking, you know, different goals. And,
yeah,
and I think one of the problems is we're dealing with an administration that's established a unitary executive in the White House.
Yeah.
This is a branch that doesn't care about what the courts say, doesn't care what the Congress says, and could care less about the rights of the states.
Mm-hmm.
And, that's what we're up against. And that the definition of this unitary executive, there's only one word to describe it, and it's fascist. And
mm-hmm.
Anyone who's a student of history knows that what happened in Germany, what happened in Mussolini's Italy, what happened in military regimes in Latin America, particularly in Chile, this was all the things that were done by these dictatorships. And they were obviously unitary executives, each and every one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not difficult to look up false flag events on Google and find that our government has indeed engaged in that kind of operation in the past on numerous occasions.
Oh, they have. Our government and the governments of some of our allies, so-called allies, have all been involved in these types of events. And in our history, I mean, our history is full of it. I mean, we can go back to the so-called sinking of the battleship Maine, which basically, this was pushed by the Rupert Murdoch of his day, a guy named William Randolph Hearst, the pioneer in yellow journalism. He was the guy that really said we need to retaliate against this outrage against the battleship Maine. We need to go after the Spanish. So we had the Spanish-American War, which, of course, picked the United States up several colonies around the world, which made us one of the imperialist powers, not one of the big ones, certainly nothing like Britain and France, but put us into the game. And, of course, now we know that the Maine was never blown up by the Spanish. It was either a boiler explosion or, at the very least, or it was blown up intentionally by the Americans to give us a reason to go to war against the the Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Does it seem that there's, is there a shadow government behind what we see out in the front? And if so, how does that work?
Well, I think there's been a shadow government, really, ever since Harry Truman, President Truman. And I'm trying to look at the historic, because what happened on 9/11, this was not something that happened overnight. And I try to tell people that, but the United States was always such a diverse country, a large country, with a lot of freedoms, and it was not the kind of country like we saw in Latin America, where you could actually overthrow the government, in the afternoon, and have the tanks in the street, have the civilian president out by 5 o'clock, and have the generals on television for the evening news, announcing the new junta. We're not that kind of country.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen in several others, and I really think this has been a slow process to get us to where we are today. So I always cite the beginning of these problems, the 1947 National Security Act, signed by President Truman, which ushered in, agencies like the CIA and later the National Security Agency, and all these super secret spy agencies.
Yeah.
Which then we saw, you go into Eisenhower and you go into Kennedy, you see the formulation of civil defense became FEMA, the mm-hmm. Federal Emergency Management Agency.
Mm-hmm.
Civil defense was fine. We needed it. Every country had civil defense. And what have we seen FEMA turn into today, and some of the outrages with FEMA during the Reagan administration, where they were the first to start putting together lists. Under Ottman, basically people like Oliver North were involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we see the Department of Homeland Security. We see basically what back when I was in the government in the 1980s, we always pointed to the fact that the Soviet Union had the KGB, and that was this unitary intelligence and law enforcement agency, terrible organization, and now we've got something that they used to have. And now Russia has basically split up its law enforcement and intelligence agencies into several different organizations. Like the Russian Border Patrol is not part of the Russian equivalent of the FBI and these others. So we've seen, here in this country, we've consolidated under Homeland Security,
uh-huh.
not all of them, but most of them. And then what was the Soviet Union, now the Russian Federation, they're going the other direction.
Huh. It's interesting that you mentioned 1947, because that was the year that the saucers landed, crashed, and that would certainly make sense if indeed that actually happened. And Edgar Mitchell seems to be coming out on the on radio shows now and
yeah.
saying that indeed this stuff is going on. The government did
yeah.
cover it up, so that would certainly explain
yeah.
some of the reason why the whole government went dark in 1947.
Well, I'm pretty much agnostic on that. I mean, I have my conversations, over a couple of drinks. But, there are some third rail issues in journalism here in Washington that people dare not get close to that third rail. But I will point out that Mitchell's not the first astronaut to talk about this. He's we saw Buzz Aldrin, the second man who walked on the moon, basically come out and say that
mm-hmm.
There was a cover up, but. But, they're the guys that were in NASA. I think that rather than them being demonized by NASA, NASA saying, well, they're entitled to their opinion, my only problem is with the government is how they'll attack these people. These were some of their top astronauts. Now, the astronaut program, as we know, with that incident with that female Navy captain who got involved in something very bizarre, the astronaut program today isn't like it used to be, but back when Mitchell and Aldrin and Wally Schirra, who I think made some comments about this issue too, back when they were in it, these guys were very much vetted. So when they come out and say these things, I think it's unfortunate that they're attacked by these people, because I think the people that make the attacks are the same kinds of people who attacked those who thought that going into Iraq was the wrong thing, and I think it's unfortunate that the shouters get all the attention, because the shouters are not usually right about anything. They're very, very wrong about issues,
right?
But they
right.
seem to get all the attention.
We've heard a lot about corruption and lobbying in Washington and K Street and so on and so forth, and what is that still going on? I mean, it surfaces periodically.
Yeah.
You know, while Nixon was around, of course, there was it seemed as if we were going to be cleaning our dirty laundry, but I think all that happened was they simply learned how to be more clever about about what they were doing, even sneakier, so that nobody really has a clue.
Right.
Is it still going on, and what would it take to clean that up?
Absolutely. And something about, talking about Richard Nixon, we always heard back during the Watergate, and then we saw the resignation of the president, we saw the House Judiciary Committee, which was under the able chairmanship of Chairman Peter Rodino, a congressman from New Jersey, who just passed away a few years ago.
Mm.
John Conyers, as good as he may be, he's certainly no Peter Rodino, because if we had somebody like Rodino as chairman, we would have had the impeachment hearings, and I think this bunch would have already been gone. We had this faux hearing yesterday. Really, it was a lot of grandstanding. It had absolutely carried no constitutional weight.
Mm-hmm.
The president, they weren't even allowed to talk about impeachment, supposedly, at this faux hearing.
Yeah.
But we always heard back during Watergate, the system worked. When Nixon got on that helicopter and flew out of there, and Ford took over, he said, see what a great system we had. This guy was elected, Nixon, by a landslide in 72 when he carried every state but Massachusetts and D.C. against George McGovern. And then here it is a couple years later, and he's resigned in disgrace. We could tell the world, look, our system worked. This
mm-hmm.
doesn't happen in your country. Today, we can't say that, because if the system still worked, these guys would have been gone a long time ago. Now, on lobbying, it's gotten much worse since the days of Richard Nixon.
We saw,
for example, Vice President Agnew resigned from office back then because he actually was accepting bags full of cash in the vice president's office. This was corrupt practices that started when he was governor of Maryland. Now, that's pretty blatant. That's pretty blatant bribery by people who, Agnew was doing favors for. But what we have today is we have these offshore accounts.
Yeah.
We've got a big scandal now with Phil Graham. I think the reason Phil Graham resigned as McCain's finance advisor was not because he talked about the American people. He said something about the American people are kind of whiners or something. I think the fact is he was a lobbyist for UBS Bank of Switzerland, and this was the bank that was found to have accounts for some of the richest people in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, most of them are, what Bush considers his base,
yeah.
the big money, the pioneers, all these people that donated money to him. So so I think what we saw with Graham was just the tip of the iceberg and the kind of lobbying that goes on. When Tom DeLay was the majority leader in the House, he had something called the K Street Project, which was basically telling all the lobbying firms and law firms that do lobbying on K Street, fire all the Democrats, bring in Republicans, and what do we see? All these scandals, Randy Duke Cunningham, all these contractors getting special favors to loot the Treasury to do these contracts for Iraq mm-hmm. and other places where they never did the work, but they put a lot of money in their pockets.
Mm-hmm.
We see that still going on. The K Street Project never really died. I think it's basically it's changing itself. It's morphing into something new. And what I'm seeing here now is the Republicans know they're going to be thrown out of office in November, and they're going to lose very badly. So we see a lot of these administration people now moving into the private sector and taking these jobs, not only in lobbying companies,
mm-hmm.
lobbying firms, law firms, but also burying themselves into the civil service where they can't be touched,
mm-hmm.
so they won't be affected when the Bush administration leaves. They'll be in there as what they call super grade civil servants, and once you're a civil servant, it basically takes an act of Congress to get rid of you.
Huh. You mentioned you believe that the Republicans will not make it back into the White House this year. Are you pretty firm about that?
Well, I mean, everything, anymore, everything's a caveat, of course. The polls, you can look at the polls and say, yeah, look at the polls. But look, I was a guy that was checking those exit polls in 2004 from places like Ohio and Missouri and other states, and it was clear. It was clear by 5 o'clock that afternoon, East Coast time, that we had a new president, and it was John Kerry. I'm telling you, that changed in a matter of hours when we saw what was going on in Ohio and then some of the returns coming in from Florida and other states. It was very clear, my God, we've got another problem here like 2000, this thing. Because these exit polls were pretty rock solid, and I actually was at a sort of an election watch get-together around the corner from the White House that evening at one of the wire services, and it was very clear that by 6 o'clock, everyone there, including some, ambassadors from other countries, members of the White House press corps, were all saying, hey, look, Bush has been tossed out, and that's not the way it happened. So everything's a caveat because we didn't know that Roe had fixed the election in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
We found out later on that evening into the next morning. But so can we trust the voting machines? No.
That's a big question.
Yeah, we can't because
we've had
not only two presidential elections where the voting machines were prompt.
When
we look at gubernatorial elections, and now we had a Republican named Spoonamore, a Republican who was involved in computer security issues for the RNC, said, hey, look, Roe was involved in fixing the election in Georgia, which got the Democratic governor and Senator Max Cleland tossed down.
Hmm.
We know what happened to Governor Siegelman in Alabama in 2002. Not only was he thrown out of office due to election fraud, then the new governor went ahead and had this project to have him indicted on trumped-up charges.
Huh.
So we've seen this guy. We saw Schwarzenegger, what Schwarzenegger did. He was conspiring with Enron and Ken Lay on the power crisis, which basically got Governor Davis recalled, and of course here Schwarzenegger comes in. So even in a state like California, it's possible. The largest state, we could see how things are manipulated, not just through the election fraud, but as I say, Schwarzenegger got in because he conspired with Enron and these other electric companies to jack up those rates, which made Governor Davis unpopular. So we see how these things happen. Could there be an event between now and Election Day? Certainly. Could there be an October surprise? Certainly, because Bush, and I think it's very important to point out that there was a report today, I'm not sure what it was, maybe one of the newspapers, maybe one of the wire services, they were talking about this new book by Jane Meyer about the military commissions and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And,
was that the one on torture?
And torture, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Torture and this whole process of Gitmo and detainees.
Yeah,
she said that Justice Department prosecutors were having to speak to one another on the telephone or in the Department of Justice using code language because they said Cheney and these neocons that were running the show were lunatics.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, these are seasoned Justice Department prosecutors, and they're saying that Cheney and these guys are lunatics. The lunatics are what Hitler had surrounding him. Hitler was, that was what Hitler was in the bunker and before. These were lunatics in those days, and we've got these lunatics now. And of course, they destroyed Germany, and if we have lunatics in power, the 25th Amendment of the Constitution says, if the president or vice president shows that they're not able to carry out the duties of president because of physical or mental impairment, that they're to be removed. And here we have Justice Department prosecutors basically now on record saying that they thought these people were lunatics.
Wow. Well, doesn't everybody kind of live in constant terror of these people? I mean, they're just...
These are nasty people, but I find... One of the ways I've been able to survive here is just to keep, it's advice that I give everybody. These people, you gotta humiliate them. You gotta intimidate them. I was calling them fascists before that was cool. What I mean? Now people, they feel okay about calling them fascists. but there was early on, it was like, well, if you use the Nazi reference, then you lose the argument. Well, I think that's baloney.
Yeah.
And they say, well, that denigrates the people and the Holocaust and, come on. If people started humiliating the Nazis in the 1930s, they wouldn't have gotten to where they were later on. And because they were accepted and with the barking dog, throw it a few scraps and it'll shut up. And it never did. And that's why I don't think we can do that today. And that's why I was calling them Nazis and fascists back in 2002. We were still in a kind of state of shock in 2001, but when 2002 came around, and you saw what was going on, I said the only way to confront this nonsense is to call these people for what they are.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned the word neocon, and of course, I know what it is, and a lot of the audience probably does, but
yes.
Maybe you could explain a little bit what the neocon agenda is, how it came about, and the general goal that they seem to be trying to move towards,
yeah.
which is a, quote, new world order, unquote.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it goes back, I encourage anyone who's interested in where this kind of philosophy came from is to read about a guy named Leo Strauss. He was a German-Jewish refugee from Nazi Germany who ironically comes to this country and finally gets a job teaching political science at the University of Chicago. And one of his colleagues in Germany was a guy named Martin Heidegger. And Martin Heidegger later became one of the chief Nazi ideologists for the Germans. Now Strauss, who was a German Jew, really liked this guy. The only problem for Strauss was he had to leave Germany. I always said if this Nazi movement wasn't so anti-Semitic, Strauss would have wound up in a nice job in the Nazi German government.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he had to leave, and he comes over here, and then he starts to train this cadre of people. You know, he thought the U.S., he didn't like anything about the way the United States, he didn't like rock and roll music. I mean, the guy was a real prude, you know.
Yeah.
His two favorite shows on television was Gunsmoke, which, you know, was always, you know, guys shooting it out,
right.
You know, in the middle of the town, the street at sunset. And his other favorite show was Perry Mason.
I'd back him on that one.
Yeah, I mean, the guy was a real nerd, and it, you know, but he had this following, and some of his students were people who we unfortunately later had to hear about ad nauseum, who became very influential in first in the Reagan administration, later in the Bush 43 administration, people like Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz. And these are the people, it's a strange hybrid, these people. When you look at these neocons, now some of them are flat out right-wing lunatics like Douglas Feith. But when you look at people like, especially some who are journalists, the William Crystal, the John Podoretz, whose father is Norman Podoretz.
Mm-hmm.
You look at these people and these neocons, and what you find with their parents and their grandparents were back in the 30s and the 40s, they were Trotskyites. They were left-wingers. They were, basically championing the New Deal, but with caveats.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I always tell people about Trotskyites, they're not left, they're not right. They're opportunistic. They will side with anybody to achieve their power. And of course they have all these, like, you know, you mentioned one world government, globalization.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the Trotskyites were pushing. But remember, Stalin broke with them, and he actually, to the point where he had a KGB agent in Mexico City, put an ice axe through Leon Trotsky's head, because everybody thinks, oh, that was so awful, Stalin, he was such a maniac. But what they don't understand is, why did Stalin issue the order he could have gotten Trotsky long before that, but he said, somewhere, you know, along the line, Trotsky crossed the line. And the line he crossed was, Trotsky was on his way from Mexico City to Washington, D.C., he was going to brief J. Edgar Hoover, and he was going to appear before the House Un-American Activities Committee, and he was going to expose the entire Soviet espionage network, not only in the United States, but all through the Western Hemisphere. And Stalin said, okay, that's it. So here we have Trotsky, this great leftist, he's going to go conspire with J. Edgar Hoover and the House Un-American Activities Committee. So is that a left-winger? No, that's an opportunist.
Yeah.
And look at the modern-day Trotskyites. Now we call them neocons, and you see the same thing. Most of these guys germinated in Henry Scoop Jackson's office. They worked for him.
Mm.
Henry Jackson was a Democrat, very conservative Democrat, but basically owned and operated by the military-industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
When Reagan became president, they all left the Democratic Party and went to work for Reagan.
Oh.
And we still have many of them today.
Interesting. Well, that kind of ties into the idea that the war on terror is really just a sophisticated media campaign to keep the country off balance in a perpetual state of profitable wartime economy.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't companies like Halliburton and dozens of others just raking in the?
Yeah. Oh,
not to mention the oil companies.
Halliburton, and we've got Blackwater, which made $1 billion after 9/11. It had been a small company doing work for the Navy SEALs up till that time. Started under Clinton, but only probably had about $250,000 in contracts. Boom, after 9/11, $1 billion.
Yeah.
We see that time and time again. We see that many of these companies are basically their principals in the companies were big donors to George W. Bush.
Yep.
Or, you know, and Dick Cheney. You mentioned Halliburton, KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root. And that is a major, and although I mentioned Harry Truman signed the National Security Act, one good thing that Truman did is during World War II, he chaired a committee to look at war profiteering. He put a lot of these guys in prison for trying to profit from World War II. A lot of these defense contractors, there's been calls to have a modern day Truman committee. James Webb, Jim Webb, the senator from Virginia, Democrat, has been really pushing that. But of course, there's still a lot of opposition to really going as far as Truman did and putting people like Eric Prince, the head of Blackwater, and these other people who have defrauded the Treasury and put them in prison where they belong.
Well, that would be refreshing to find out that there actually could be oversight and that, you know, justice can be done still in the country. I don't think that's ever going to happen with Bush in the White House. So
No, it won't happen. And, you know, we have to be careful even with Obama, because what we see now is a lot of people are glomming onto Obama, including the Republicans, people like Chuck Hagel. I've heard a recent rumor that there may be a big endorsement coming from Colin Powell, Brent Scowcroft.
Hmm.
Now, these are Bush 41 people.
Yeah.
And they're talking about this. They're talking about, there was a report today that I almost floored me, put me off my chair when I saw that Obama's vice presidential search committee was actually considering Ann Veneman to be his running mate. Now, who the heck is Ann Veneman?
I was going to say, who is that?
She was Bush 43's first Secretary of Agriculture.
Oh,
she's from California. She was anti-environmental, big agriculture, and how in the world does she, in her name, unless this is some sort of a crude joke, but I mean, this was being reported by the corporate media today. Of course, we can't, you know, they're obviously floating these balloons for a reason. I wouldn't put much faith in what they report, but the mere fact that the Obama campaign didn't come out and say this is nonsense is kind of worrisome. So, I think we have to even be careful if a Democratic and they'll bring in a lot of the Clinton people. Of course, Clinton, the terrible war he waged against Yugoslavia, we have to and what he, you know, all the other things he was involved with,
yeah,
and overseas. We have to remember, like, people like Richard Holbrooke could very easily wind up in an Albright, and these other ones could easily wind up in an Obama administration. I think that would be not as bad as McCain administration, but nothing to write home about either.
Well, it wasn't whatever happened to there was an enormous Ron Paul movement, and it seems like it hasn't actually died yet.
Yeah.
Whatever happened with that?
Well, I mean, there was a big movement. It generated a lot of interest, but now, you know, we see the Republican convention now scheduled for Minneapolis. I mean, in St. Paul, actually.
Hmm.
We see there will be Ron Paul people there, but look, I mean, the RNC is going to run that show. It's going to be Kane's big moment, and in the old days, they were allowed to have these floor demonstrations for other candidates. That's when these conventions were a lot more open than they are today. I don't expect we'll see any floor demonstrations for Ron Paul at the Republican convention. As a matter of fact, I covered the two conventions in 2000, the one, the Republicans in Philadelphia, Democrats in LA, and security would not even allow people to bring in certain, posters and things, signs. They all had to be approved by the convention officials. So the idea of the conventions are this great outpouring of people exercising their democratic rights is a lot of nonsense today, because they're so controlled. They're just these television events, they're really like big infomercials,
yeah,
more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, you know, we really haven't had a two-party system for quite a while, don't you think?
No, no, we have. I don't want to quote a guy who was basically running as a segregationist in 1968, although he became much more of a populist and a progressive later on when he went back to being governor of Alabama and returned to the Democratic Party. But George Wallace, when he ran as a third-party candidate in 68, one of the things that struck home with a lot of people, he won a couple, he won some electoral votes, mostly southern states, but he used to say, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the Republican and Democratic Party. And he was actually right. I mean, maybe for the wrong reasons, he was right then, and we see that today. When we see Nancy Pelosi, basically, I'll tell you the biggest outrage, day before yesterday, Nancy Pelosi appoints a committee. She calls it a citizens' committee to provide oversight of members of Congress who violate ethics. And it's this new House Ethics Office. And who does she appoint as one of the co-chairs? Of course, this was done with John Boehner, the minority leader in the House. She appoints Porter Goss. Porter Goss, the former head of the CIA, was basically fired because he was involved in a lot of this nonsense with Duke Cunningham and poker parties and prostitutes and Shirlington limousines and all this other stuff here. He was fired. And now he's winding up as a co-chair of this House Ethics Committee.
Oh, great.
It's an outrage. And I really hope that Nancy Pelosi is defeated by Cindy Sheehan. I mean, it may not happen, but I would never endorse Nancy Pelosi to retain her House seat. She should lose that seat and, of course, lose the speakership.
Well, you know, it seems like she had her opportunity. And she could have, you know, she could have done what she said she was going to do. And I've seen her turn and twist and turn into the exact opposite of what she started out.
Absolutely. And I always say if she'd spend more time reading the Constitution, what her responsibilities are as Speaker of the House, and spend less time looking at what kind of treatment she's going to get in her health spas to get rid of her wrinkles. I mean, I think more venomous snakes have died to eliminate Nancy Pelosi's wrinkles than we've probably seen any other reptile kill in recent history, including the meteor that wiped out the dinosaurs. this woman is, I mean, first of all, people don't understand, many people don't understand her background. Her father was the mayor of Baltimore. He was a mobster. He was a mobbed-up mayor of Baltimore. I mean, I don't mean to say this because, you know, she's of Italian descent, but that's a fact. I mean, her father was a boss mayor of Baltimore. He was tied up with Lucky Luciano. Luciano ran the ports to get rid of all the communist influence in the port of Baltimore after World War II. That's what her father did, and she's been tied to the mob ever since.
I did not know.
Tommy D'Alessandri was her father, and he was he's still legendary in Baltimore is one of the most corrupt, mobbed-up mayors the city ever had.
Good Lord. Well, now that we're on the subject of dirt, is there anything that you know about either candidate for president that might not be common knowledge?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen some things thrown out there. I'll tell you the one big thing is John McCain. And I know there's been a lot of information, what did he do when he was a POW? Was he cooperating with the enemy? I know there's some information out there, but what I've concentrated more on is not when he was POW, but what happened before his plane was shot down by the North Vietnamese. And there was an incident in 1967, before he was shot down, a few months before he was shot down, the USS Forrestal experienced the worst fire in the history of the United States Navy. It was a deadly fire, killed well over 100 sailors. What happened was there was McCain was assigned to that ship. He was with one of the squadrons, McCain was known as a hotshot. His father was an admiral at the time. His grandfather had been an admiral in World War II. So he basically wore his father's and his grandfather's admiral rank on his sleeve.
Right.
Even though he was only a lieutenant commander. But he was known as Johnny Wetstart McCain. Now, what does a Wetstart mean? That means John McCain's A-4 Skyhawk that he flew he, on the flight deck, he could do something called a wet start, which is basically he would rev the engines and have some flame shoot out the back. This was just like fraternity hazing. But, you know, a flight deck of a carrier, there's weapons, there's bombs, there's missiles, there's all kinds of explosive material, there's, you know, jet fuel. And this was just irresponsible behavior. So he does this one time. And of course, there's a plane behind him that's got an air-to-air missile, a Zuni rocket missile. It ignites, fires off, goes across the flight deck. There's this huge, a series of explosions. Guys being blown off the flight deck into the South China Sea.
Whoa.
And you know, fortunately for McCain, but here's the interesting: McCain was the only guy who was flown off by helicopter off that day. They had sailors with terrible burns who were being treated on the Forrestal.
Huh.
The Forrestal was crippled, but here McCain is taken off the ship to the USS Oriskany, where he had been reassigned. He never went back to the Forrestal. I talked to crewmen on the Forrestal. They told me that McCain was responsible for this.
Huh.
Fortunately for McCain, he gets shot down as a POW, and now we only know him as John McCain, the war hero, shot down POW. What if that had never happened? We would have known John McCain as the guy who caused this terrible conflagration on the Forrestal. Now, people wonder, why did John McCain change, from 2000, where he went after George Bush, went after the we didn't really see the neocons then, but he went after George Bush and the people around George Bush. And all of a sudden, John McCain, 4 years later, is hugging George Bush, kissing him, saying what a great guy is, and then he gets because the people that ran the Pentagon, Rumsfeld, Feith, Wolfowitz, and the others there, had access to all of McCain's Navy records.
Oh.
And they know what happened. And that's what I believe they have John McCain blackmailed.
Oh.
And that's why we saw John McCain change the way he did.
Well, you know, that explains a lot about the House and the Senate and the Congress, doesn't it? Aren't a lot of those people blackmailed, if not just...
Yeah, and we know now that, look at the Patriot Act, look at the wiretapping authority. I think we've seen wholesale surveillance of members of Congress, and I think we see a lot of blackmail. Why is John Conyers, for example, why did he say, if I become the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I will put impeachment on the table, and then after he becomes the chairman, he says impeachment's off the table.
Right.
Well, it's because people may have heard of a guy named Congressman William Jefferson from New Orleans. He was the guy who was found with $90,000 in cash in his freezer. He was indicted. He's still under indictment. That trial's still going on. Jefferson, and what I understand is Conyers was visited after this investigation against Jefferson was underway. Conyers was visited one morning at his office in the Rayburn Building by two FBI agents, 10 o'clock in the morning. We're in there for about an hour, left. Nobody knew about it. The meeting was unscheduled. The word is, hey, Congressman, Chairman Conyers, we have information. We've uncovered evidence that you are involved with Jefferson, but mostly with Nigerian contracts, all kinds of skanky stuff. And they said, hey, we don't really want to indict a sitting chairman of the Judiciary Committee, but how about let's get off this impeachment kick.
That's
what happened.
Yeah. Well, that seems like standard operating procedure, doesn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. And, I think this has gone on. I mean, we knew that J. Edgar Hoover did this. I mean, he was the master of it. But now I think it's much more widespread than even what Hoover had on people.
Yeah.
He had a lot of files, but in some cases, he didn't go after people. He couldn't watch everyone, but if Hoover had the technology, he would have. But Hoover didn't have all the technology.
Oh yeah,
he had special agents. There was only so many people they could spy on. Now he spied on a lot of people, but he could have only dreamed of the technology that's available today.
Oh, that would have been a wet dream for him, wouldn't it?
It would have been. It would have been. Yeah. Well, of course, I always said with things like camera phones and things like that, we could have turned the tables on Hoover if we had the technology. We could have probably had a few shots of him wearing the dresses.
Yes, that would have been quite interesting, wouldn't it?
The mafia certainly had those photos, and that's why he never went after organized crime.
Oh yeah.
But we could have all maybe had a chance to see those photos.
That would have been a good laugh. Now, the Iraq War, I'm just going to briefly touch upon that. That's kind of an entree, isn't it, into the Iran War? What's going on with all this? I mean,
Remember Bush was talking about the axis of evil, and he had, it was Iraq, Iran, North Korea.
Yeah.
This was his, we've got North Korea, basically, they're getting rid of their nuclear program, and we must have sent Kim Jong-il some basketball signed by Michael Jordan. I mean, that's what Madeleine Albright did to get him on the, a guy like him who likes, apparently he likes to watch Western DVDs, and he likes scotch.
Yeah.
You can deal with a guy like that.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Saddam Hussein listened to Frank Sinatra and also liked to drink expensive scotch.
Yeah.
We could have dealt with him.
Yeah.
And we can deal with the Iranians too. Maybe they don't drink in public, but I can tell you there's a lot of underground bars in Tehran. but the neocons, they want perpetual war. They want this American century, project for the new Mary, all this nonsense,
all this
propaganda. And that's obviously Iran is the next phase, and they're still around for six more months. So I think we have to be very careful about what
they're supposed to do. Absolutely. And I think it's important that people know that these drum beats that get ramped up are done on purpose to influence us. It's basically we're being brainwashed and dumbed down. And I've heard a lot about the idea that the part of the Iraq War was behind Saddam's pegging oil to the euro. He wanted to move it away, peg the value of oil away from the American dollar, and that was going to happen, and that was one of the reasons. And, of course, that's happening in Iran, too. They're squawking about doing that, pegging the value of the oil to the euro.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any truth to that, that it has to do that?
I think it's a contributing factor, because look at how we stepped up the pressure against Hugo Chavez, who's basically talked about the same thing. I think it's a contributing factor, but I would also point out that there's a recent book written by a Republican congressman from Indiana, one of the few Republicans who voted against the Iraq War, John Hostetler, conservative Republican, very much involved with the evangelical movement, recently wrote a book, and he said, we went into Iraq for two major reasons. One is, Bush somehow thought he was retaliating against the Iraqis for trying to kill his daddy. That was this thing in Kuwait. And that was nonsense. There was no such thing as these guys who were charged with trying to kill Bush when he visited Kuwait. I mean, the father Bush.
Right.
41.
Right.
They were whiskey smugglers. They had no interest in that, but they were picked up, useful people to blame. Anyway, Hostetler said it was Bush 43's desire for revenge against Hussein for that. And also, he pointed out the Israeli influence in the Bush 43 administration, particularly in the Pentagon, with people like Feitz and Wolfowitz. And he came right out and said it was because of the Jewish influence. I wouldn't have used that, but Hostetler did, because many Jewish Americans are opposed to this Iraq and any future war in Iran. But Hostetler came right out and said it. That's kind of a third rail also.
Huh.
And he's very similar to what a guy named Paul Finley, another Republican, wrote a book back in the early 80s called Those Who Dared. He was a congressman from Illinois, neighboring state to Indiana, and said, look, the reason the U.S. is paying all this money for oil and, Arabs got us, they don't like us is because of our, the fact is that AIPAC has all, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee has all this influence in Washington. He said it back in the early 80s. He paid with his seat. Hostetler lost in 2006 in the sweep in the House. But look, Cynthia McKinney, former congresswoman for Georgia, now Green Party candidate, she basically said the same thing. She's a Democrat, a very liberal Democrat. So you've got her agreeing with Hostetler. I know she met with Finley, who's an old man now, but, he said, look, we fought this battle back then. So I think the Israel lobby is an issue in this capital. AIPAC basically saw Pelosi and Obama and McCain. McCain was the first speaker. And Hillary Clinton all went to AIPAC to basically, count out of this group. This is an extremely right-wing group of Israeli expansionists. And why our politicians feel encumbered to go have to appear before that group is beyond me. Now, I know there's another group that's been formed to counter the influence of AIPAC, but AIPAC is very, very, very strong. And probably, people say, which is the stronger lobby in Washington, AIPAC or AARP? I said, well, AARP hasn't caused this country to go to war.
Right.
I mean, they fight for Social Security.
Right.
So when it comes to stronger, I'd say AIPAC is much stronger than AARP.
Well, you know, there are a couple of other groups that get bandied about, and Alex Jones has brought this to everybody's attention in the media, and that is the Bilderberg meetings, and then the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission.
Yeah.
Are these more players in the basketball game?
Well, you know, anything that's secret like they are, I mean, they deserve to be focused on. You know, we've never seen anybody in the major media take on the Bilderbergs or, you know, CFR, because a lot of your major media people show up at these Bilderberg meetings and
they're
members of the CFR.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, and it's like the Skull and Bones. I mean, here we had, in 04, we had John Kerry, George W. Bush, both in this weird macabre organization at Yale. We saw in the Good Shepherd, the movie about the CIA, how, you know, even the guy who was supposed to be Wild Bill Donovan, the founder of the OSS man, CIA guy, said, hey, you know, they're a bunch of weirdos. They, you know, these guys urinate on each other.
Yeah.
And that's the line in the movie, and that's true.
Yeah.
This is a bizarre organization that deserves a lot more attention than what it gets. And I think when President Kennedy spoke to the newspaper Association of Newspaper Editors in New York City, I forget what year it was. It might have been 62. He warned against, everybody thought when he was warning against these secret, organizations that he was talking about, you know, the communists. And I don't think Kennedy was I think Kennedy was talking about these organizations that we've just finished talking about here.
Yeah.
And he said they're very, very dangerous to a democratic society.
Yeah, and you see how long he lasted.
Exactly. He may have been victimized by these groups.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
He and quite a few other people that were trying to bring, you know, some sense of decency and integrity and peace
absolutely.
And justice to the world.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know,
it seems
good ones get killed off, and what's left is the scum.
That's true. And, I look at the Kennedy family suffered so much. I mean, and it's true.
Yeah.
People say, oh, that's kind of like a cliche. But look, I mean, John Kennedy Jr., I am firmly convinced had John Kennedy Jr. not died in that plane crash, that he would have been the senator from New York instead of Hillary Clinton. He would have been the Democratic candidate for president.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I can't even begin to go there.
Right.
Before, we have a little bit of time left, and I wanted to just briefly touch upon the financial crisis that seems to be hitting. Everybody's in denial about, you know, recession, and Bush is saying, oh, everything's fine, there's a little bump.
Oh, he's delusional.
Well,
of course,
every word that comes out of his mouth is a spin of some sort. So,
I
think most people have kind of cottoned on to that. What's really going on with all these failures and the Federal Reserve stepping in and pumping in billions of trillions of dollars?
Well,
have we seen the end of that or what?
It's what they used to call voodoo economics.
Yeah.
I think I forget who used. I think I was. 41 was using it against Reagan in the 1980 Republican primaries, but this is voodoo. It's witchcraft economics.
Yeah.
It's printing money. We're sending out checks to go buy stuff made in China. What was that? That doesn't do anything for a balance of trade problem in this country. So,
no.
I mean, it's like after 9/11. He tells everybody to go out and buy an SUV. We got a fuel crisis now. You know,
right.
Go shopping. Right. Go shopping after 9/11. I mean, it's ludicrous, you know. And the question is, who are we going to hold accountable for this?
Yeah.
I mean, Putin is now holding accountable the oligarchs who raided the Soviet and Russian treasuries, many of whom are now in exile.
Uh-huh.
These Russian oligarchs, he's got some of them in jail. He got Khodorkovsky, the guy who was the head of Yukos. He's got him in jail, but he don't have all of them. But we need to put these people in jail. The people that looted our treasury through. For war and greed and corruption, they need to pay the price, and they need to do what President Putin. I mean, I'm the last guy. I was in the NSA during the Reagan administration. The Soviet Union was the enemy,
yeah.
And I never thought I'd be praising the president of Russia, but I think Putin's got it right.
Yeah.
You hold these guys who steal from the people in the Treasury account, but you put them in jail. We need to take a page from his book.
Absolutely.
And I think he's getting a bum rap over here from the media.
I think he's too.
Cracked down. But he's cracked down against the people to be cracked down on.
Yes, I do too. I agree with you on that. I agree with you. Well, now, before we end, would you be so kind as to tell us where people can find your column and how, you know, are you still doing your radio show and so on?
Right. Well, I have a website. It's sort of like the old one. I'm trying to do this like the Anderson and Pearson did with the Washington Merry-Go-Round. It's www.waynemadsen.com, that's all together, .com. And on there, people find the books. I've got a recent book, Overthrow a Fascist Regime on $15 a Day, sort of like the old Europe on $5 a Day. But how you can actually make a difference using the Internet and meager resources to fight against the people who have billions at their disposal, it can be done.
Wonderful. Well, I read your column daily, and I love it. There's a sense of humor in there that's very wry, and I enjoy the articles, and
well,
I always find something useful and educational that you don't find on any of the mainstream media or other places. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
Right. Well, the problem with the mainstream media is they're too busy socializing with the people they should be covering, and that is always a recipe for disaster.
Yep. Well, I thank you so much for being on the show. This is a great show, and I wish you the best with your site, and I'd like to have you back sometime, and we'll talk more.
Oh, absolutely. You bet.
All right. Thanks again, Wayne.
Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Bye.